Welcome again to The Good Word. We're resuming our study of Joshua. I am your host, Bob Resch, and again, with me are my conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry and Dr. Jody Washburn. We resume our study of the book of Joshua with a lesson which has been entitled, The Conflict Beyond All Conflicts, and that reminds us that above and beyond many human conflicts are struggles that many of us Christians call the great controversy. Our lesson this week finds Joshua within enemy territory, away from his camp, and apparently alone. Under these dangerous circumstances, he looks up to discover an armed man whose sword is already drawn. Question: would this be a good time for Joshua to challenge the mysterious stranger?
Do you mean to challenge him in a fight?
I don't know. Joshua is the first to speak, and he's not very courteous either. He simply blurts out a challenge. Who are you? What are you for? Are you for our side or somebody else? And that could kind of raise anger if it were there.
But you are, you know how when you have the whole story, I don't know if you start at the end of a book, if you get a good book.
I have a friend who will never read a book until she's read the last chapter.
So wherever you fall on that, what I'm saying is you have access to the story. And so you know this is going to turn out to be the messenger of the Lord's army, right? But
Yes. If
we were to stop right here before we get to that knowledge, I think this text again is painting a portrait of Joshua in a long line of I don't know what word to use. Courageous, direct, abrupt, presumptuous. There's not a great fit. But for instance, Abraham, you know, the father of all the tribes that were coming into their story. Abraham is known for the legacy of like going directly with a divine powerful force, right? Very, very like, hey, but what about this? And if there was this, then what would you do? And how can you do that? It's going to make you look bad. And Moses does the same. And so there's a legacy here. And so I think in a way we could both, before we know this is an angel of the Lord's army and after we know it's an angel of the Lord's army, I think it sort of casts Joshua as being part of this legacy of people who are willing to be direct and are willing to ask questions and are willing to have, I don't know if I would say conflict, but absolutely like heated engagement with people who are powerful.
And if the question you ask might lead to a heated engagement, should Joshua perhaps draw his sword before he challenges anybody? Well, what happened is Joshua asked an either-or question. Are you with us? Are you against us? And this stranger said, neither. I represent the Lord's army. How do you suppose Joshua felt at that time?
That could certainly take one down a notch if they were feeling, you know, extra hyped up and confident that God was on their side after the crossing of the sea or any number of things that have kind of set in stone, you know, that idea that, oh, we're on a divinely sanctioned path.
Yeah. And I like that answer. I mean, I like the quick explanation. I think Joshua was reassured that this is the Lord's army leader. But Joshua had asked an either-or question. And over the years, I've learned to shun either-or true-false questions because they're not always very carefully written. When God rescued Israel from Egypt, did he need any Israelites to help him fight Egyptians? And we recall that some maybe 800 years later, God sent an angel who rescued his people from 185,000 Assyrians. So what should we learn from these out-of-context facts? The lesson suggested that if we trust in God, we will be free of violence. We'll not be victims of violence. I'm not sure it said that, but I got that impression. I think many Christians believe that if they know God, and they ask for his protection, that no evil will befall them. Would you like to give any personal testimonies or explain what we should inquire about here?
I mean, two things come to mind. One is with your initial question of like Joshua's response and like what kind of response would make sense. I go back to the beginning of your question where you said Joshua is in enemy territory. And I guess it just brings to my attention that when we are in a like in a space that might bring forth like a survival response, that we're focused on just the most basics, right? We're not in a space where we can hold the prefrontal cortex, I guess is what they say, holds the both and or the complexity or the, like you said, okay, most of the most productive questions are generally open-ended, right?
Yes.
And so it makes sense to me in that way that if we are seeing the text as painting Joshua in enemy territory, then it makes sense that he's wanting to move toward this either or, right? You need very straightforward black and white way to make sense when you're focused on survival. But the other piece that I would say here, moving on to the second part of your question about this perception, like that I will be free and safe and if God is with me, right?
Yes.
I think this goes back to what Matilda said in an earlier lesson, which is that in a way we can read the book of Joshua and all the way to the end of the book of Kings as a collection of work whose introduction is Deuteronomy. And we could take it even farther than that. Many, many scholars of the Hebrew prophetic literature say that basically almost every text is an interpretation of a current situation through the lens of Deuteronomy. And so in that regard, yes, I mean, Deuteronomy has these very black and white descriptions of like blessing and curse. Like if you listen well to me, it says, if you listen well to the Lord God, then you are going to experience fertility at every level. Your crops are going to produce well. Mm-hmm. Your animals are going to reproduce and be safe and, you know, expand. Your herds will expand. Your own families will be fertile. You'll be able to have babies. Your babies will live. You will have, it says, peace on every side, right? But the curse is, like, if you do not listen well to the Lord your God, then the opposite, right? You're going to have drought and devastation and not enough food. Your animals are not going to do well. You're going to be infertile and you're going to experience war and violence from around you. And so in that regard, that is a lens from the book of Deuteronomy that we see applied to particular circumstances throughout most of the Hebrew Bible, you know, because mm-hmm. Deuteronomy provides this sort of like glasses through which the writers might look or make sense of or interpret or frame a story that makes it into the final version of these books. And so, yeah, I guess just a reminder that this is a lens. It's a lens.
Okay. Yes, please.
So if we put ourselves into that story directly in this episode here with the man, like who is like a captain with a sword, and Joshua asked that question, are you for us or against us? And this person, this human, is like armed, right? And I would imagine Joshua would like to have him say, of course, I'm for you, and mm-hmm. I will go ahead of you, and I will fight. Here is my sword, and so on. But he does not say any of that. He says, take off your sandals. This is holy ground. Mm-hmm. So we are back in the Moses story with the burning bush
yep.
in this case. And so every time these kind of ways of portrayals of God who comes to like intervene in a situation like this comes around, then we are in a world that is like, not this and not that. It's very different. It's not the human yes or no, like the question was, but it is a very different way how God shows up to in order to deal with that.
So Joshua makes a demand. He mm-hmm. demands an answer. Are you with us or against us? And the answer is, that's really up to you.
And so the next part of the story will show that, because he has a sword, but he is not going to fight with the sword. And so he gives all these instructions about taking the ark and marching around the city walls and all of that, right? And then shouting. What kind of war is that? That is not human warfare. And so things happen in a way and on a scale that is not humanly explainable with our own ways of, you know, doing these kind of violent things. So Joshua is, again, somebody who is similar to Moses. Also, he needed his brother Aaron to go to Egypt to talk for him with Pharaoh. And then you have God intervening with those plagues and so on. And Moses is just like somebody who just like, hey, God shows up again. Look at God. He's showing up again. And here we have something of that sort. Joshua, the follower in Moses' line, kind of. But he is still not Moses.
Thank you. Again, I hope I misunderstood, but I think our lesson suggested that if we're in harmony with God, we must have much less fear about becoming a victim of violence. Now, our world has many, many victims of violence. Should we, as self-righteous people, pretend that role for a moment, say, okay, you're a victim of violence, that means you are not sufficiently obedient to God?
Absolutely not.
Tell us more, Judy.
You can tell I'm not a Calvinist. No, the reason I say, and maybe I should be careful how I say this, because I think there's a reason that we have multiple threads in the text. There might be times in our lives, there might be circumstances where some people need this sense that, oh, if a terrible calamity is coming upon me, it must be from God and I just need to accept it. But I think that assuming that and telling it to other people has caused untold levels of harm that's not necessary. So I think the whole like some people will point out, there's a big difference between saying, generally speaking, if you live according to these principles, you and your crops and your people are going to thrive, and then sitting in my little suburban neighborhood and looking across the street and saying, oh, that person just had their car repossessed and their child was just diagnosed with cancer. So that must mean that they stepped away from alignment with God, right? Inferring back is very different than stating a general principle. And I mean, I think the most helpful thing that I've ever heard, and I'm sure many people who listen here have heard me say this before, but Professor Karen Kilby has made the case that, like, we just shouldn't be stating, we shouldn't be interpreting the suffering of other people in terms of God's power. So it's okay if I want to make sense of my own story, right? If it's helpful for me to say, this is time and chance happens to us all, fine. If it's helpful for me to say, God brought this and God is going to see me through it, fine. But don't be doing any theodicy or explanation of God and his work in suffering, in regard to human suffering, on behalf of other people. It's out of line.
Thank you. I remember a righteous man somewhere in the Bible who had terrible troubles that he did not deserve, but three friends came to comfort him, and they did comfort him very much for a whole week.
Mm-hmm. And then they opened
until
their mouths.
They started talking, and the comfort just evaporated. Should we learn anything from that? All right, that pretty much comes to the end of our time for today. So thanks once again to our engineer, Corin Bailey, to Dr. Jody Washburn, to Dr. Matilda Fry. Again, I am Bob Resch, and we hope that all of you will join us next week for more of The Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.